supporting WHYY Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
I'm Brad Linder, and this is Newsworks Tonight. Dave Heller's off this evening. Lawyers for Green Party candidate Jill Stein were in federal court in Philadelphia this afternoon to push for a recount of Pennsylvania's presidential vote just days before the deadline to certify the state's election results. WHYY's Katie Colinari was in the courtroom and joins us now with the latest. Katie, what happened today?
Well, Brad, today was the battle of the computer nerds. On one side, you had lawyers for Green Party candidate Jill Stein, who called up their computer science and cybersecurity expert, who says Pennsylvania's electronic voting systems are vulnerable to hacks. That's despite the fact that they're not connected to the internet or to a local network. And he explained how it might be possible for a hacker to spread malware onto these machines, although it is worth pointing out that the Stein camp actually doesn't have evidence right now that that happened in Pennsylvania. Then on the other side, lawyers for the state and for President Donald Trump, President-elect Donald Trump and Vice President-elect Mike Pence, called their own computer science expert to the stand. And he said the hacking scenarios Stein's expert described are, quote, about as likely as androids from outer space living among us. He said hacking an electronic voting machine in a university computer lab is way different than doing it in real life. These machines are locked up in a warehouse, and it would require breaking and counterfeiting these special seals that they attach to the machines to detect tampering.
And so what did Stein's expert say in response?
Well, they had a press conference after today's hearing, and I asked her expert, J. Alex Halderman, from the University of Michigan about that. And he insisted that reality is just as hackable as the lab, but he did concede on one point.
I think this year it probably is more likely that the polls were wrong than that there was a cyber attack. But I think they're both significant possibilities. And I think we owe it to the public to do the investigation, to look at the evidence and find out which of those is right.
The Stein camp is making the case that there's an easy way to find out the truth, and that's by allowing a limited recount of ballots and a forensic examination of electronic voting machines in Pennsylvania. That's what Stein and her lawyers want permission from the judge to be able to do.
So did the judge give an indication what he's thinking?
Well, Judge Paul Diamond was definitely skeptical for sure. He criticized Stein's lawyers for taking 3 weeks to bring the case all the way to federal court. And he seems really concerned about the fact that the deadline to certify Pennsylvania's election is coming up on Tuesday. And granting in favor of the Stein camp would throw a giant monkey wrench into meeting that deadline.
So when does the judge plan to make a decision?
He says he hopes to rule on the case first thing Monday morning.
Thanks, Katie.
Thanks, Brad.
Officials in Cumberland County, New Jersey, want to eradicate homelessness by 2020. They estimate about 60 people are chronically homeless in the largely rural county. As WHYY's Joe Hernandez reports, the idea is to find those people housing as quickly as possible.
4 years ago, Dr. Robin Weinstein started a program in Cumberland County to provide shelter to homeless people when the temperature dropped below freezing. But he says it isn't enough.
Triaging the effects of homelessness is not a sustainable practice, and indeed will be a failure if we allow the problem to continue.
Weinstein and others are now starting a Housing First program, offering housing vouchers to Cumberland County's chronically homeless. That means people who've been homeless for 12 months over the last 3 years, people like Michael Carter, who's been homeless for 5 years.
Sometimes we have to panhandle to ask people for something to eat and go out and do a yard or something like that, or ask people, can we cut their grass or cut down trees, something like that.
Carter's an Air Force vet and a senior citizen. He says he started living on the streets when the mother of his child kicked him out of the house after a disagreement.
This morning I went to Dunkin' Donuts. A girl that knows me there gave me a free donut. And right now I know I go to Salvation Army to eat lunch. And then from Salvation Army I go up to St. Teresa's to eat lunch again and try to package some of my food so I can have something at nighttime to eat, so I won't be out here panhandling.
Will he apply for one of these housing vouchers? Probably not. Carter's on unemployment now and says he's trying to save up for a place of his own. But he says he knows plenty of homeless people in Cumberland County who could use the help.
Me, I'm a hustler. I'm a man. I can do for me. You know what I'm saying? But there's a lot of people that who don't get no money at all, no assistance at all, that's not able to do for themselves. So
officials say three people in Cumberland County have applied for the housing vouchers so far. From the New Jersey desk, I'm Joe Hernandez, WHYY News.
New Jersey Governor Chris Christie is making big changes to the state's Board of Education. This week, he appointed five new members to the 13-person board, and one person who was not reappointed is Board of Education Chair Mark Biedron. He'll step down when his term ends in June. Joining us to dissect the shakeup is NJ Spotlight's John Mooney. John, thanks for talking to us.
Glad to be here.
First, what exactly does the State Board of Education do?
Yeah, the State Board is a 13-member board in New Jersey, appointed by the governor, a bunch of staggered terms, so typically there's not one governor having a whole lot of appointments at a time, but it basically sets the administrative code that often is required with statute that's passed by the legislature. So when the legislature requires, you know, a high school graduation test, it is the state board that is then the process through which what that test is going to look like, you know, what courses, what cut scores, and all the rest. And it's the details in the law that lead to a lot of the enforcement. And so they can carry quite a bit of weight.
So this week, Governor Christie announced that he's making five new appointments, reappointing eight members. Do we know why he made these changes?
These seats are staggered, but what happens, a lot of them, the appointments don't come on a timely manner, and that long precedes Governor Christie. And so they sort of pile up all at once. And he's got a year to go, and this was the time, I guess, he chose to make all these appointments at once, or in many cases, some reappointments as well. He had that situation when he came into office. John Corzine had led a lot of these laps and ended up where Christie himself had eight new appointments to the board at that point.
And so what do we know about this recent decision not to reappoint the chair of the board? What does that
tell us? Yeah, that was interesting. I mean, Mark Biedron is the president of the board and had been pretty outspoken and active. I mean, the board sometimes has suffered from becoming really a boilerplate or a rubber stamp on administrative policies and the like. And Mark had been stepping out and not so much controversial in his own positions, but he was seeking a lot of input from different advocacy groups, including the unions that haven't necessarily been best friends of the governor's. And it really sort of raised the profile of the board, and I think had generally gotten pretty good reviews along those lines.
And are there any other new appointees that are noteworthy for one reason
or another? Angel Cordero from Camden is, who, you know, should be a familiar name, has run for mayor. I believe council, very active in school issues. I think was back in 2010, at the beginning of Christie's term, actually, had been one of the more outspoken folks for private school vouchers when that was a very hot issue. Folks who know him, he's certainly outspoken himself and certainly not shy. So he may be livening up these state board meetings more than we know.
And speaking of Camden, Camden is a city that's under state control when it comes to the school system. Any chance that having Angel Cordero on the board or anything else that's happening could make any changes there?
Yeah, I mean, that is a key role of the state board is determining interventions that the state take on schools, including takeovers. So certainly, and that is starting to percolate as an issue in Camden as well. It's now 3 years into the takeover, and, you know, there's some gains that are being made that actually was a topic of conversation before the state board this week. And I can't see it happening very quickly where you're going to start seeing some return of local control to Camden, but I also don't think it's going to be one of those very long-running ones like we've seen in Newark and Patterson that are now 20-plus years.
So given what's likely to be the new makeup of the board, can we say anything about what the next couple of years is going to look like?
Certainly the governor is pressing some school issues before he leaves, and a lot of issues around funding where the board is not all that involved. But a big issue that is before the board right now is charter schools. They're basically a deregulation of much of the operations of charter schools, including around teacher certification. And that is before the board and a very hot topic, one that Biedron had been quite deliberative on and maybe one of the reasons he's not going to be the president for long. But they're going to be setting some new rules for the state in terms of these schools. And Camden has quite a few of them. South Jersey has quite a few of them. Newark is, you know, one of the larger charter school communities in the country, actually. And so I think the state board will be interesting to see where they fall.
John Mooney writes about education for NJ Spotlight. Thanks for taking the time to talk with us on Newsworks Tonight, John.
Glad to be here.
Here's an example of human activity contributing to climate change. The heated confirmation hearings ahead for Donald Trump's nominee to lead the Environmental Protection Agency. In this week's edition of What Are We Thinking?, Frank Newport, editor-in-chief at the Gallup Poll, joins Newsworks Tonight host Dave Heller to gauge the public's concern for environmental issues.
Frank, when we typically talk about issues of importance to the public, the environment is rarely near the top.
That's right. When we ask open-endedly about the top problems facing the country now, and actually when we ask about in the future, the environment or climate change does not generally appear near the top, which doesn't necessarily mean it's not an important issue. It's just not a top-of-mind issue for Americans at this point compared to straightforward near-term issues like the economy.
Though it will likely come into more awareness when these hearings get underway for Oklahoma Attorney General Scott Pruitt. He's been a booster of the fossil fuel industry and an outspoken critic of what he derides as the EPA's activist agenda.
Well, our data would suggest that if the American public were holding hearings, he would be in some trouble, because all of our indicators show that the public is actually very sympathetic to things that he apparently is not. For example, a question we asked, should priority be given to fossil fuels such as oil, gas, and coal, we mentioned those specifically, or should they be given to the environment? Well, 59-34, Americans tell us there's more interest in concern for priority for the environment rather than the development of fossil fuels. And that's encapsulates, I think, pretty well exactly the argument that's going to come forth when he has his hearing. The public is very sensitive to the environment, more so than the development of these traditional energy sources. Also, we juxtaposition those traditional sources against alternative solar, wind, and what have you, and Americans give more priority to the alternative ones than increasing production of those traditional sources. So all in all, he's on the downside of American public opinion.
Does that sentiment, though, break down by party?
Well, of course. Republicans are much more sympathetic in general to traditional sources of energy. They are less sympathetic to prioritizing the environment. And this is very important. All of our analysis shows that Republicans have been less likely than Democrats, particularly over the last 10 years or so, to give a sense of priority or urgency to climate change or global warming. But when you put all the data together, the majority of Americans favor the kind of policies it looks like he does not favor.
Social issues and specifically abortion were also rarely mentioned during the previous presidential cycle, though now Ohio legislatures passed a controversial bill making it illegal to perform an abortion there when a fetal heartbeat can be heard. Let's revisit American attitudes on abortion.
Yeah, it's a good time to revisit them. Keep in mind, and I think we've talked about this a number of times before, Americans generally are not in favor of banning anything altogether. For example, guns. Americans don't want to ban guns, and that's clear on abortion. A very small percent of Americans, about 19 in our last update this year, say that abortion should be illegal in all circumstances. Now, the Ohio law you're talking about doesn't make it illegal in all circumstances, but nevertheless, it comes fairly close to it. And there are indications that President-elect Trump wants to appoint Supreme Court justices who would be in favor of doing away with or overturning Roe versus Wade. However, the majority of Americans do favor restrictions. So if you define the Ohio law as one which puts a lot of restrictions on abortions, in a general sense, Americans would say that's all right. If you define the Ohio law as one that's saying basically outlaws abortion, Americans would not be in favor of going that far.
Healthcare was a primary topic during the election. Do Americans favor first dismantling Obamacare and or replacing it?
The majority of Americans favor changing Obamacare, refining it, making alterations to it. Only 37% will say repeal it totally and then replace it. But when you put those people together with those who say, yeah, keep the law, but make significant, we use that word significant changes, the percent goes way up to a significant majority.
Thanks, Frank.
You bet, Dave.
Frank Newport, editor-in-chief at the Gallup Poll. He joins us each week at this time on NewsWorks Tonight.
That's all for tonight's show. NewsWorks Tonight is produced by Shai Ben-Yakov, Kimberly Haas, Ty Johnson, and Brett Rader. The news director is Eugene Son. John Musoni is assistant vice president for news operations. Our engineers this week were Al Banks, Diana Martinez, and Adam Stanishetsky. Sandra Clark is vice president of news and civic dialogue. You can listen again to a story or catch up on a missed show via podcast or online at newsworks.org. Thanks for joining us, and have a great weekend. I'm Brad Linder for NewsWorks Tonight.